time to wake to sleep with Sleep Science Today, where we learn to sleep well with your host, Andrew Kolsky, on UK Health Radio.
Welcome to Sleep Science Today, the show where we talk all about sleep and the science behind sleep. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky, and today we're going to be talking with Pete Hill. Pete is a host of the radio show The D Word, also on UK Health Radio, and The D Word meaning dementia. So Pete, welcome, and thanks for joining us on the show.
Thanks for having me, Andrew. It's a real pleasure. And a little bit different, of course, because I'm on the other side of the microphone this time, answering the questions, not hosting the show. So I'm looking forward to it.
Well, we appreciate you joining us, and we're looking forward to learning some of the things that you've learned over the years. So maybe could we start off with you telling us a little bit about how did you even come up with the concept of the D Word radio show, and what exactly is it that you do on that show?
Yeah, of course. Concept of the D Word radio show, well, kind of strangely, actually, the concept of the D Word radio show was born when I was a teenager, a long time ago, because I went and I volunteered at a large psychiatric hospital in North London. I'm from the UK, and I worked on their radio station. And one day I hadn't been there very long. I was in a ward which had very high ceilings, peeling paint, and sitting around a television were probably about 20 people staring blankly at a screen. And the television was, this was 1980s. And so what was called the vertical hold, and the television had gone, and the picture kept flipping over every 30 seconds, going ga-dunk, ga-dunk, like this. And people were just sitting there watching. And I looked and I asked the nurse, what's going on? Who are these people? He said, oh, they're all geriatrics. And I was a teenager. I didn't think any more of it, really. And sitting in the corner was a lady who's probably the same age as my mother at the same time. That lady, I learned later on, was Catherine. And if we fast forward to round about 2016, I suddenly got involved in the world of dementia by working for the Alzheimer's Society. And that memory came back to me because I realised that Catherine was living with early onset dementia, and all those people sent around the TV were also living with dementia. I worked for the Alzheimer's Society for 2 years. When that contract came to an end, I thought back to my old radio days. I thought back to Catherine and thought, well, I'd like to learn more about this subject. So I put dementia and radio into Google. And what I came up with was a lady called Laurie LeBay, who does a program called Alzheimer's Speaks out of Minnesota. Laurie and I are now good friends. I listened to Laurie and I thought, well, somebody must be doing something else like this, talking about dementia on the radio, and nobody in the UK was. So I thought, okay, I'll give it a go. Thankfully, through UK Health Radio, I got given an hour a week. That was 5 years and 267 episodes ago. And the reason for it being called the D Word is when I was working for the Alzheimer's Society, I was managing activity groups for people living with dementia in the community. And we would go into halls, church halls, community halls, where we would hold the groups. And there would usually be a lobby, and then you would go through a door into the hall. And I used to meet our group members with their loved ones in the lobby and just greet them. And I always used to say to their loved ones or carers, you do know the one word we never mention when we go through that door. And they used to look at me and say, well, what's that? And I used to say, the D word. Because there's no point in me going into a room full of 18 people living with dementia and saying, that's Dennis with dementia, that's Iris with dementia. What's the point? That's Dennis and Iris, because people are living with dementia, but we need still, they are still people. It doesn't matter. And dementia is a disease like any other disease. And hence, that's really how the D word came about.
Wow, that's fantastic. And, you know, to have been doing it for so long and have so many episodes is wonderful. So I encourage people here, listeners, if you have an extended interest in dementia, please check out Pete's show on the same network on UK Health Radio, and you'll learn a whole lot more. But here, because we're a sleep show, we're going to be talking about dementia and some of the angles where sleep is relevant. But in order to do all that, why don't we start off with some basics? So in your presentation there, you talked about the word dementia, you talked about the word Alzheimer's, and I know people hear all these different words. Can you start us off by explaining what is the difference, if there is, and just kind of give us some background?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the most prevalent question probably I get asked, Andrew, is what's the difference between Alzheimer's and dementia? So let's start there, because dementia is an umbrella term. So dementia is an umbrella term for a number of conditions, Alzheimer's disease being one. The other more prominent types of dementia are vascular dementia, frontotemporal dementia, and Lewy body dementia. So they are all, in effect, different diseases because they all present with different symptoms. Here in the UK, there are roughly 980,000 people living with dementia at the moment, 55 million worldwide. One in three people born today will develop dementia in the future. And in the UK now, and in the US, I understand, it's the leading cause of death, which comes as a surprise to people. I spent my career before I started doing all this radio stuff in public health. And I was dealing with things like heart disease, diabetes, etc. And all that time, I never heard the D word mentioned at all, because still, dementia is, as I see it, sitting in the corner while all the other prominent causes of disease, etc., are in the other corner. And it's never really brought together. That's why people don't like to talk about it. And there's a kind of fundamental misunderstanding. So, you know, the most prominent point to get across is that dementia is a disease. It is not a natural part of aging, which a lot of people think it is. Because you have young onset dementia, even though children's dementia. Very, very small percentage, it's got to be said. But, you know, a lot of people under 65 get, unfortunately, are diagnosed with dementia. So dementia is not a normal part of aging.
Wow. I never even heard of a children's dementia. Do you have any more details about that? Like, how would someone even know to be looking for that?
Well, in terms of, you know, dementia is a cognitive decline, and a fairly steep cognitive decline. So in terms of children's dementia, or even people under 65, the kind of classification is, if someone's diagnosed under 65, it's called young onset dementia. And there are obviously a number of conditions that can, in the early stages, give fairly similar symptoms. So it is very difficult. And diagnosis is a big problem across the world in terms of the ability to be able to diagnose, because the sooner you diagnose someone, the sooner you can do something about it. And it's thought that there is a possibility that people, maybe even 4 or 5 years before a diagnosis, are already showing stages through dementia. So in terms of, you know, to answer your question, in terms of childhood dementia, very, very difficult, because it's the last thing anyone expects. You know, you go through a whole gamut of stuff before you suddenly realize. And, I've got to say, it is a very, very small percentage, but it is still there.
Wow. So, gosh, I'm just trying to kind of take all this in because of the various types of dementia. But dementia in general, like you said, turns out being cognitive decline. And so Is there any way to quickly or easily understand the difference between these different types of dementia? If they all have cognitive decline, then why are there different types?
Because, you know, the brain is a very complex thing, as we know, and dementia will affect different parts of the brain in different ways, which will give rise mm-hmm. to different symptoms in terms of the types of dementia. If I go through just a couple, I mean, Alzheimer's symptoms in Alzheimer's, most people will start to talk about memory. They will start to talk about short-term memory loss. It is a lot more than just short-term memory loss. But basically, it's the areas of the brain that it will affect you. So in terms of Alzheimer's, it's a very slow cognitive decline in your cognitive ability, which can go all the way through from anywhere from 2-3 years to 20 years. If we look at vascular dementia is associated, as the word says, with the blood supply to the brain. So in vascular dementia, in very simplistic terms, you undergo a number of mini strokes. And every time you have a mini stroke, your cognitive ability declines quite sharply. So if you compare Alzheimer's, which is a slow decline, to vascular dementia, Alzheimer's has got a very slow graph, which takes it from top to bottom. Vascular dementia, I describe it, it's almost like going down a set of stairs. So you have a small stroke, and therefore you have quite a sharp decline. Then you steady, and then you have another sharp decline. So that's how you separate those two types of dementia. Frontotemporal dementia affects a particular part of the brain which controls our inhibitions, what we say, how we behave. And so people with frontotemporal dementia show a lot more of those types of symptoms. Lewy body dementia is about things called Lewy bodies, which build up in the brain and will give rise to another set of symptoms. Lewy body dementia and Parkinson's have a similarity in the types of symptoms. You're more likely to have physical symptoms, physical disability, than you are to have short-term memory loss. So, I'm going through fairly simplistically. I'm not a medical expert, but, you know, those are the things I've learned. So once you actually start looking at those symptoms, you've got a fairly good path to tell what type of dementia. The only thing that complicates it is they can have more than one type at the same time. So you're going to have what would then be a diagnosis would be called mixed dementia. So you would show symptoms of various types of dementia all in one condition.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. I never even thought about that part. Well, let me ask one other question there for clarification before we get to a commercial break here. And that is, so, you know, you were describing Alzheimer's, for example, and it can kind of come on slowly over time. Is there a way to distinguish between the natural aging process, you know, as we get older? I know for myself, I'm talking with friends and all, and I'm 60. So, you know, people talk about, you know, I'm forgetting things sometimes and those types of things. And there's part of it that is natural aging. But then there's the other part, and you wonder, oh my gosh, am I coming down with something? Is there a way to know?
Yeah, the example I always used to use is that we probably all lose our keys somewhere. So where do I put my keys? Oh, where are my keys? I've got a 30-year-old daughter who's forever losing her keys. Okay. The difference between the natural aging process, which says, oh, where did I put my keys? Ah, oh, there are my keys. I left them at the top of the stairs, you know, in the lobby or wherever. The greater likelihood is with something like Alzheimer's, you would find those keys eventually. You would look at them and you would think, what do I do with these? And that's the difference between natural aging and, you know, we do decline cognitively as we age in terms of forgetting things. So it's not just the forgetting things, it's then tying things together. It's been able to process as well. A few of the you know, when people have a diagnosis of Alzheimer's, one of the things that people get, medical people will get people living with dementia to do, is draw a clock face. Now we can draw a clock face, put the numbers in the approximate right order around it. That becomes very difficult when you've got dementia. That's one of the things that processing. The other thing, the other test is count backwards from 100 in steps of three. So 97, 94, 91, 88, etc. Someone with dementia will find that very, very difficult to do. And they are the kind of two of the initial tests that someone would give someone if they suspect dementia.
Wow, that's really interesting. I wasn't aware of that. But that does help kind of clarify the difference between natural aging and a dementia type of forgetting. So thank you for that. So let me go ahead and take a quick commercial break right now, and we will come back with Pete Hill, and we'll talk more about dementia, and we'll get into how it impacts sleep. See you back in just a minute.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Okay, we're back on Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. We are talking with Pete Hill, host of his own radio show, The D Word. And so we got a good background on dementia now, and now I'd like to find out a little bit about sleep and dementia. What type of connections exist, if any?
There are so many connections in terms of sleep and dementia. Firstly, as I understand, in part of the sleep process is removing toxins and waste products from the brain. That's what, you know, sleep allows us to do. Unfortunately, in terms of dementia, there are chemicals called beta amyloids, which a lot of people believe a buildup of beta amyloid in the brain eventually affects the connections between neurons and can lead to cognitive declines like dementia. And when we go to sleep, we do manage to remove a lot of these beta amyloids, so therefore give us a much lesser chance of being diagnosed with dementia. So I think there's a whole mechanical process which goes on in terms of removing these toxins from our brains, which can then cause a problem later on in terms of cognitive decline. And also there is studies. Nobody really has come up with a 100% study of if you do not have enough sleep, then you will develop dementia. Nobody is saying that, but it is definitely now, with a lot of the studies that are going on, a risk factor for developing dementia because of that mechanical process that I just outlined. And also a number of other things. I mean, there's a lot of links with Parkinson's. Again, I talked about that in the first part of the show. Where, you know, REM, sleep behavior disorder, RBD, you're more likely to develop dementia if you have that particular thing. Also, so things like sleep apnea, which can obviously break your sleep pattern, etc. So there's a lot of links between the process of sleep and the possibility of then at a later age developing dementia. The other area is obviously when you are living with dementia, how that affects your sleep patterns, which is greatly. People living with dementia tend to sleep more, first of all, and secondly, it tends to be when it's a thing called sundowning. So as it says, when the sun goes down and the evening starts to appear, one of the things dementia does is that it completely changes your inward body clock. So your ability to actually recognize the fact the sun's going down, it is getting dark, time to go to sleep, gradually disappears, which is why people living with dementia tend to get quite agitated around dusk, tends not to go to sleep, to wander, to walk around, walk with purpose, as it's called. Sometimes at sundowning time, it will give you confusion as to actually where you are. So it will increase your level of confusion. You may not feel that you are where you are. So people with dementia will ask to go home when they are at home, want to collect the kids again from school when the kids have grown up for a long time. And it will basically increase the level of confusion. And that's all around sundowning. And there's a whole kind of science around sundowning that people look at. It's one of the kind of prominent symptoms, actually, in terms of dementia, which obviously is very much sleep-related.
Right, right. So you were talking about, you know, the cleaning of the brain and how the brain process works, especially during sleep. And you were mentioning the beta amyloid plaques, and then there's the tau proteins and all. So does each of the types of dementia present similarly in terms of seeing an increase in the amyloid plaques in the brain, or do they all kind of look the same?
Yeah, generally, obviously, you've got Lewy body dementia where you're introducing a whole kind of slightly different area. But the thoughts are, I mean, there is still a lot of study on tau proteins, tangles, amyloid plaques, etc. There is a train of thought that maybe they're not as important as people think. Other people think they are very important. And, you know, one of the things, maybe we should have said this at the beginning, but, you know, dementia is a terminal condition. There is no cure. People are, you know, very much looking in terms of cures. Last year and the year before, I think we had the first developments of new dementia drugs in two decades. And these basically will only look at people in the early stages of dementia. So there is a lot of work to be done on, you know, what you said, and that is an area that people are looking at amongst a lot of other areas in terms of the real influence of, you know, things like beta amyloid and also our ability, or in terms of sleep, inability to do something about it.
So that raises another question, which is the whole concept of prevention. And, you know, I want to say something here, and then I'd love to hear your you know, feedback on this. So like you say, you know, there's a lot of studies that are being done currently, and we're learning a lot more about dementia and the, you know, impact of amyloid plaques and the tau proteins and what that really means and how it all works. And yes, there's a connection to sleep. And, you know, the big thing is in sleep, when we get into stage three sleep, which is our deep sleep, that's where the brain typically does the cleaning that we're talking about. And the challenge there is some people who are having sleep problems, they turn to, you know, sleeping pills. Now, there's a lot of different types of sleeping pills, but sedatives and things like that. And many of these things might bring you to stage two sleep, but I'm not so sure they bring you to stage three sleep. So you think you're sleeping, you're not, you're just knocked out from a medication, and you never even get to stage three. So there's all sorts of issues. There's no science that says what that means yet, but I just find it interesting. So from your knowledge and the shows and guests that you've spoken with on your shows, prevention-wise, are there any things that people could or should do to prevent dementia?
Yeah, there are a number of identifiable lifestyle factors which can reduce a risk of dementia by up to 40%. Now, a lot of these are standard things that you would think of, and a lot of them are heart related. Because the interesting thing is, there's been a whole science around the heart health. What's good for your heart? This is good for your heart. But there hasn't been too much connection with what's good for your heart is also good for your brain. Because when you think of things like vascular dementia, which is circulation related, it makes absolute sense that heart health and brain health are absolutely linked. We look at things like diet, or the influence of a good diet, the influence of blood pressure, the influence of cholesterol, the influence of alcohol, the influence of smoking. So that whole line of things that people have just looked at for a healthy lifestyle. Well, if you're generally looking at all those things associated with a healthy lifestyle, then they're not only going to protect you from heart disease, diabetes, and all the other things that we think of, they're also going to give you a protection against dementia. The Alzheimer's Disease International did a report 2 years ago, which, if anybody's interested in this whole dementia prevention area, I would just go read that, because it was all about prevention. And I think one of the frustrations from not only me but Alzheimer's Disease International, that message hasn't really got across. 2 years ago, the report came out. On the other side, there are other things that you may not have thought. Social isolation being one. If you are socially isolated, therefore, your chances of developing dementia are greater. If you don't keep yourself cognitively stimulated, that's another one. Exercise is another one. And exercise, obviously, related again to our heart health, cardiovascular health, etc. So there's a whole range of things, but I do like to say to people, think of all the things that you would think are good for a healthy lifestyle, and most people can come up with most of these. They don't need people like me. They don't even need medical experts to tell them in the end, because a lot of it is real common sense. And it will very much reduce your risk of dementia. The only thing is, obviously, you want to start thinking about this in your 20s. This isn't for an in your 20s. We talked about young onset dementia, but probably the last thing you're thinking about is dementia in your 20s. But really, that's where your lifestyle starts. Start it then, and then for a brighter future, as it were.
Right. Well, that's one of the hardest things for people to do, because they're just not thinking about it. In your 20s, you're invincible. You can do anything in your own mind, right? And then you don't worry about these things till later. Same thing as saving for retirement. The best time to start is in your 20s, but a lot of people don't do it until much later in life. So, it's hard sometimes for people to process that message. I've been doing a lot of reading of my own in this area, and the impact of diet being one major area. And like you said, really, it can come down to common sense. If you're eating a lot of fatty, greasy, processed foods, you're probably not going to be doing your system much of a favor. But eating the regular foods that are identifiable by picking them off of a farm and things like that, probably a better choice. So I know for myself in particular, based on all that, I've switched up my diet a lot. And now to think of eating in America, especially a greasy burger and fries is such a standard meal. I can't even think of doing that anymore. Maybe once in a while, but generally, no, it's just way too much and too heavy. But let me stop us real quick for another commercial break, and we'll be right back on Sleep Science Today.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. the station that makes you feel good.
All right, we're back on Sleep Science today. We're talking with Pete Hill, host of the D Word radio show and all about dementia and sleep. So we, you know, we're talking about prevention and those types of things. I'd also like to make sure we cover an area about not only, you know, sleep related to someone with dementia. You were talking about sundowning and those types of things, but also caretakers. And basic lessons learned. What types of things have you learned through your experience talking to people about this, about all the other aspects, the caregivers, and all the other things that are necessary?
Yeah, you know, I talk to a lot of caregivers, and I guess understandably, you know, they're a little bit in the background because everybody concentrates on the person that is living with dementia, but. You talk to caregivers, and you know this is a whole thing. It's a whole job in itself. A quote that I had on one of my shows a couple of weeks ago was that caregivers are expected to perform open heart surgery without a manual. And what was behind that is that nobody tells you what is going to happen. Nobody tells you how to cope with all of this. And one thing you have to do is look after yourself as a caregiver. And, you know, earlier in our conversation, you said the last thing people in their 20s think about is kind of the future because they're invincible. Well, until you actually get into the position of a caregiver, it's probably the last thing you think about as well. And in terms of getting your sleep, in terms of you having a healthy diet, and in terms of you looking after all the things that you should do, it's very difficult to do when you add also a high level of anxiety, because you are caring for someone that is going through a steep cognitive decline. You don't quite know what's going to happen next. And also that whole, you know, let's not get over it. Still, there's a whole load of stigma about dementia. And I have experience of people that have lost friends. I've had family members that don't talk to them anymore. Mainly because people don't know how to deal with it. They have no idea how to deal with this person that was their friend or was their family member that's changing in front of their eyes, and they can't cope with it. And for a caregiver to actually be standing alongside that person and watch that happening is a massive source of anxiety, worry, fear, etc. And so it's, you know, it's carers are taken for granted. And I know here in the UK, we've got the NHS. Basically, if all the carers today said, no, thank you, I'm not going to do it anymore, then our NHS would disappear overnight. It would implode. And carers take a massive, massive responsibility. They save governments all over the world billions of dollars and pounds. But it's often their own health that they don't take care of because they're so concentrating on caring for the person that they are looking after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I understand that completely. And, you know, it's hard because people don't have unlimited funds to hire full-time, you know, caregiving or even pay for different types of memory care facilities or things. I know there's a lot of different types of, you know, opportunities out there. You know, I will mention, and I'll be curious to hear if you've, you know, talked about any of this on your show. You know, if you're a caregiver at home and you're trying to deal with all of the realities of life and you've got to get sleep yourself or you can't even be a good caregiver because you won't be able to function, you know, luckily today with technology and different attention paid to this area, there are some things that help. Like I know one big thing when you were talking about sundowning, where you'll have someone who maybe has dementia and they wander or they might leave the house and, you know, you have to kind of watch over that. So there's little alarms and things you can put on your doors that'll just chime and let you know that somebody's going outside. So if you're sleeping in the middle of the night, you'll know that something happened. There is the opportunity to hire someone part-time so that your costs are much lower, but you still have that relief where you can get to the grocery store and do the things you need to do. Do you have any other tips and things like that that you've talked about on your show?
I think, you know, you mentioned technology, and the use of technology is something that is, you know, very important. And also a lot of, you know, cheap technology now. It's not expensive to do these. Mm-hmm. And generally, you know, I think in terms of caregiving, it's to talk to people that are in the same position as you. I'm a great one for getting people around the table and just sharing their experience, because everybody is different. And this is the real thing with dementia. The saying is, you know, if you've met one person with dementia, you've met one person with dementia. So while there are certain commonalities, everybody is different in terms of the way they approach things. And there are, you know, we've talked about, you know, diet and things like that. But in terms of stuff like sundowning, for example, you know, not a good idea if people are having caffeinated or alcoholic drinks before they, you know, before that time they want to go to sleep. Someone naps a lot during the day, then, you know, it's unlikely they're going to want to sleep at night. Closing the curtains so you can make that real distinction between day and night. Because, you know, I said earlier that, you know, we watch it, don't we? And I look out the window and think, oh, yeah, it's getting a bit dull now, so it must be about 6 o'clock in the evening or whatever. Well, someone with dementia doesn't make that connection. So you have to make a sharper connection with this is day, this is night, and it's more likely to be understood. And to be in a routine, I mean, routines are very, very important for people living with dementia. One of the things that happens, sadly, when you move people living with dementia from their own home into memory care facility or a care facility, they find it incredibly difficult. And sadly, those people tend to pass away fairly quickly sometimes when they are moved from their own home to a different place, because that sense of confusion, you know, for you and I, we go away on holiday, we turn up in a hotel room in a strange town. Okay, eventually we just get used to where we're going. We'll multiply that by 1,000 for someone living with dementia and just imagine what it might be like. So, you know, real routines are very, very important for people living with dementia, and also important for carers as well to get themselves through the day, as it were.
Right, right. No, I love that. Those are some great points. So as we're talking about that, you know, I was realizing I'm in the US, you're in the UK. So from the UK, if someone is in the UK who's listening to this, what are there resources? You mentioned a couple before, but can you give websites or resources that might be useful for people if they're a caregiver, or maybe there's someone who is in early stages and they realize that dementia is a real thing for them? Support groups, anything. What type of resources do you recommend?
There's a problem with resources, and that's the fact that the World Wide Web is so wide that you can be given a whole load of stuff, some of which is brilliant and some of which is, you know, not so good. Obviously, here in the UK, we've got the Alzheimer's Society. The Alzheimer's Society are a gateway to a lot of other services. We have charities like Dementia UK, who also, Dementia UK operate with what are called Admiral Nurses. Admiral Nurses are specialist dementia nurses. And, you know, they're a very good place to start. There's an initiative at the moment. I should tell you about it. It's an initiative in the UK at the moment. There's one of our banks, or a building society as they're called, but are a bank nationwide, and they're actually teamed up with Dementia UK. And in their high street branches, they are offering an Admiral Nurse for people to go and talk to an Admiral Nurse about dementia. So if you're a carer of someone, you're someone living with dementia, go to www.dementiauk.org and look at this service, because it's available throughout the UK at branches of this particular building society. And that's a really good start. That gives you a chance to talk to an Admiral Nurse. They're brilliant. They're absolutely superb, all of them. And so that type of resource is terrific. The only problem is with resources, and I will say here in the UK, and I know it's a problem for you in the US as well, is they tend to be local, and there are lots of little local groups that pop up, but there isn't really anyone anywhere that knows everything that's being done. And it's very difficult for these little groups to join together. I live in Hertfordshire in the UK, 30 miles north of London. I know of individual groups in my area. I used to run six that people living with dementia can go to. You could go into another county in the UK, and that framework wouldn't exist. So it's very difficult in terms of local to know what's happening. So that's why you have to go to places like the Alzheimer's Society, Dementia UK, start from there and work backwards, as it were.
Right. Wow. Well, it's probably very similar here in the U.S. in terms of the Alzheimer's Association we have. One of the things that is encouraging to me is that you're starting to see more books being written in the area, more science being done in the area. I don't know if you have it in the UK. In the US, we have something called the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute. And it's basically universities all around the country have a chapter of this. And it's for seniors, typically retired executives, who are looking for, you know, ways to be involved, engaged in educational types of classes. And one of them that I attended recently was at the University of Miami, and they brought in someone from their medical school who deals with dementia, and they put on a whole series, I don't know if it was six or eight classes, something like that, where they really talked about the things that you and I are talking about in detail. So the education is getting out there, and opportunities are available. And then, look, you doing what you do on your show is bringing a lot of information to people that they otherwise wouldn't have had. So you saw a need and you filled it, and we're glad that you did. So with that, we're actually out of time for our show. I want to thank you for taking the time out of your schedule to join us and share all of the information that you've learned. It's very educational, very helpful. And again, I encourage people, if this is an area that's of interest to them, to listen to Pete's show, The D Word, and you'll get much more in-depth information about all sorts of things related to dementia. So, Pete, I'm going to give you the last word.
Thanks, Andrew. It's been an absolute pleasure, and very much enjoyed it. And, I think your area of sleep science is very important. And I think it's something people take for granted a little bit as well. And, it's an area that, I think I've got to look into a bit more as well. So thank you so much for having me on your show.
Fantastic. All right. So thank you for listening. Sleep Science Today. If you want to learn more about us, join us at www.sleepsciencetoday.com. You can sign up for a mailing list. You can find the book that I put out there, which is about sleep and sleep issues, and Why Can't I Sleep Well is the title. We look forward to seeing you on future shows. And thank you for joining us at Sleep Science Today.
Thank you for listening to Sleep Science Today and learning how to sleep better with your host, Andrew Kolsky, on UK Health Radio. For more information on how you can achieve better sleep, go to sleepsciencetoday.com. Remember, Sleep Science today and sleep better tonight.